Is it up working?
Yep, everything's good.
Awesome.
So, all right, thanks for taking the time to do this.
Of course.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
My year was 2009, and I was a music business major with a focus on management.
Gotcha. And what was your primary instrument?
Upright bass.
Cool. Heavy.
Yep, very heavy.
All right. So tell us about your current job or jobs.
So right now I left the music industry about a year and a half ago to start my own company. I have a company that focuses on women's tech accessories. So I design, produce, and then sell computer bags, phone chargers, anything that a woman would use for their commute to go to work or when they're on the road for work. And it just came out of a need from working in the music industry and being on the road like 300 days a year and needing a way to carry my laptop. No, so I was doing that for a year.
Very cool. I'm a little bit curious, sure we could go into more, but you talk about, you know, phone chargers for women. I think of that as a fairly universal need. What makes
it?
What's that?
I know. Believe me, we have men's stuff coming next.
Okay. I was just curious as to how is it, you know, targeted for women?
Well, our phone chargers is in a tassel. It's like a tassel keychain, so it's a charm for a bag.
Gotcha. So it's sort of decorative and fashionable.
Exactly. Yep. So it's functional, but it's hidden in a stylish bag charm, which is pretty popular right now.
Gotcha. So, and the name of your company?
It's called LDR. So it started out as a name that was a variation on our initials, but then we realized it's leader without the vowels, and we like that. And it also stands for long distance relationship. And that's what you kind of are going through when you're far away from your office, your friends, your family, when you're on the road. So.
Gotcha.
So yeah.
You said you have a partner in your business?
I do. She worked in the sports industry. And actually, we both came from Ohio, and we both ended up managing talent. And we just happened to be the only friends that really left our hometowns and traveled. So we always had, like, the frequent flyer miles. We were always crossing paths in different cities. And we both were always together with our computers, and they're just, like, a common thing we would talk about. So when she got relocated for work in New York, that's when I decided to quit my job and just live with her and try and launch this.
Gotcha. So your current company, is it the two of you? Do you have work outside help or?
Yeah, so we have interns. We have different vendors and contractors that we use. We have it just depends on what part of the process we're in. So we just finished designing a 12-piece collection. So we had technical drawers and a factory and a point person to oversee that. And I also went to China. And now we're in, like, sales mode now that we actually have inventory. And her background is in sales. So she is now taking all the inventory and doing a lot of business-to-business events and back-end sales. And then we have our forward-facing e-commerce site. And we're with some, like, retailers online, too. So.
Wow, that sounds exciting. How many hours a week do you work these days?
All the time. It's never ending. I mean, it's kind of funny because we both were in very aggressive industries, and then we just pivoted into something that was very unknown and also aggressive because you're starting your own company and you really don't – we started something that we really don't have a lot of reference points for, so we're learning a lot as we go. And it's two of us, so it's we're doing – marketing and sales and operations and design. We're doing it all. So.
Well, yeah. So tell us briefly, if you don't mind, at least the short version of the various products that you have. You said it's sort of women's tech accessories. Any other examples?
We have our like standard 13-inch computer bag, and then we make a 15-inch version. We make a special bag just for like an iPad. Or a tablet. We have three charging tassels. We have one that is a phone charger, one that has a flash drive in it, and one that has a charging cable that you, it's like USB to micro USB or lightning. We have a cord keeper, which organizes like your headset. It like lives on the cord and you can wrap it up and clip it. We have a tote bag that is like a really large version of our computer bag that has individual computer sleeves in it. And then we've designed, but we haven't got the sample made yet for a charger without the tassel part that a guy could use. We also designed a backpack that seems to be very popular with people who like to travel, but also like to hike and take their computers other places.
Gotcha. And so in this two-person company, can you go into detail as to what exactly is your role?
So I'm the CEO and co-founder. I designed everything. Because I didn't go to fashion school, I had to mock it all up in poster board to scale, and then I would hand it over to technical drawer, and he would do like the blueprint for the pattern maker. But I kind of actually realized from being in music that some people know theory really well and all the boundaries, and some people are just really good playing and learning by ear. And it doesn't ever stop them from playing, not knowing all the rules. So I kind of said to myself, even though I'm not like technically trained in fashion, I can still use different mediums to describe and explain my vision to people I need to work with. So I designed everything. I didn't realize I was ever going to be doing that in my life, but it was a cool part. And now that it's over, working at a label, I was the first employee hired, so I got really hands-on with operations. So for this company, I oversee all the accounting, all the legal, anything that is in nuts and bolts. And then I do all the content creation and marketing, because in my past, that is what my main focus was merchandise, photo shoots, video shoots for music. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just making content for this.
Got it. Well, with all you do, what does your partner do?
She does sales. That's what she's really strong in. She's been selling sponsorships for very large brands and corporations for the past 10 years. So I basically give her assets and she takes them into the world and talks about it, gets people excited about it, sells it, does deals where we have good product placement at certain events. And that in itself is a full-time job. So
if you don't mind sharing, I'm not going to ask you what you're paid, but I'm a little bit curious in this sort of partnership. How do you all determine what you each get paid?
Well, that's a good question. We have a lot of equity. And then basically when you're starting something, when we first started, I just sold everything. And she ended up selling a lot of her stuff. And we just really took it easy. And now it's still a young company. So basically we give ourselves living expenses now that our product's launched and we're actually positively bringing in revenue. There's a little bit more, but it's still very modest because everything that we can make, we put back into the company. But we are in New York, and New York is very expensive.
Gotcha. When you say you sold a lot of stuff, are you saying you sold your equity, or are you saying you sold?
I sold like all of my items and possessions. Like when we decided to go full time, I had money saved up, but I also like sold my car. I sold all my furniture. I sold like everything I owned. So I'd have to put back into the company.
Gotcha. Wow. And you said that you've been self-funded
pretty much.
Cool. You said you've been doing this a little over a year.
Yeah, so I moved to New York last April and started doing it full time. I've been developing the product for probably a year and a half to almost 2 years before I left.
Gotcha. And hey, I know you mentioned a big list of things you do. So what's your typical day, or if you wish, typical week look like?
Well, a typical day is doing a lot of financial planning, budgeting. There's always like some type of account reconciliation. I have taxes that are quarterly, corporate filings, talking to lawyers. And then there's usually some type of content creation that I'm doing. So coming up with a marketing idea, talking to our advertising company, figuring out if the content that we've given them is working, looking at our sales on the site and like overseeing inventory and making those adjustments. And then weekly, usually about once a week, we're out of the office one or two days doing pop-up shops or events. Last week we were in New Orleans for a conference, so we were traveling, meeting other companies, finding ways to partner with them. So there's a lot of just grinding in the office, and then maybe 30% of the rest of the time is like very forward-facing, meeting people, networking, things like that.
Gotcha. I'm curious in terms of where your product is sold. Do you typically sell directly to the customer? Do you try to get into big stores, specialty stores?
Well, we've been talking to a lot of specialty stores for luggage and for tech. We've talked to the big box retailers. It's really tricky for a new company, and it's really risky. And we actually just got some inventory back that parts of the order was damaged. So we're lucky that like we're figuring things out before we have to deliver to a big box. They're all these retailers, if people are doing so much online that they're very nervous and they're not willing to take the risks on emerging brands. So it's risky for both parties. So we've been staying away from that. We've been talking about doing seasonal fun things and trunk shows with them. But right now we're focused, our demographic is so tech heavy on like online retailers. So we're with one that's called Aha Life, and they're really prominent. They're based in Brooklyn, and they have like a special women in tech section. So we've been featured there a few times, and we're consistently our product sold in the women's section there. So we've been trying to really focus on grassroots efforts. So going to do pop-up shops, going into different companies, and doing special events for them. UPS just bought our bags to gift at the Masters. So we were at the Masters a couple weeks ago doing a special.
The Masters?
Yeah.
What's that?
The golfing Masters.
Okay.
So we've had like cool opportunities like that we've been focusing on.
And do you have your own like direct customer website, or do you all do?
We do. It's LDRbrands.com, and we've had that up and running. Sometimes when we go to launch a product, we'll do a pre-order. So we launched that site officially last June, and that's where the bulk of our orders come through, and it's great because that's where the best margin is for us. So.
Right, of course, because someone else will want to make some profit if they're selling it.
Exactly.
Great. Okay, next question for you here is, tell us what you like about your job. I can hear that enthusiasm in your voice, but I want to hear it explicitly.
Sure. I really love being able to create something every day. Even if it's not creating a bag, it might be creating content or a cool ad, but it's just envisioning something and bringing it to life is probably the best part. And doing it in a way that, like, you want to do it. Sometimes you fail or you make mistakes, but it's nice to be in control and knowing that, like, if you made a mistake, you can own it and you can fix it. Sometimes when you're part of a bigger company, you are doing something because that's what the team decided or what the leader of the company decided, and you may not always agree. So it's really cool to be able to succeed and fail in your own way. Mm-hmm. And just, I think the being able to be curious about something and explore it more and learn. I mean, I'm 30 and it's nice to kind of hit the restart button, go into a new industry and realize like it's never too late to try something new.
Cool. All right. So in that case, let's take it back to 2009.
Sure. Do you want me to start with just what I did right when I got out of school?
Yeah, because I'm guessing fashion designer was not on your radar at the time.
Not at all. So in 2009, I ended up moving to Pittsburgh.
Where you're from?
No, I'm actually from
Ohio, right?
Yeah, I had a boyfriend from Pittsburgh, and so I randomly decided that after school I would try to make it work there. Mm-hmm. But I had like a really strong rule with myself that I wasn't going to get frustrated and like get a normal 9-to-5 job or become a waitress. Like anything I did every day was going to involve music. So I ended up, when I first got there, found a great job at a jazz venue. It was also a nonprofit, so I did a lot of like community outreach. And so I headed that up, and I made a whole jazz lecture series, and I went out into the community and partnered with Barnes & Noble and did a whole speaking lecture series with them. And then we also worked with kids and did kid programming.
By the way, do you mind sharing how you found that job? Like a Craigslist ad or a...
How did I find that? I think I knew I wanted to work in jazz, and there was only probably one place. There was one jazz venue that was very prominent that had national acts, mm-hmm. but I just got very lucky that they were hiring. And coming from Pittsburgh, not many people focus on jazz or have a music business background from Berkeley. So I think I was probably one of the only candidates, and the one out of like the group just stood out. And they had like a little jazz band, and I played bass. Like, it was just a good fit. So I guess like the stars aligned.
Excellent. And do you recall what your title was?
I think I was an administration and production assistant.
Gotcha.
It was a small group of like 3 or 4 people in the office.
And definitely a paid job.
Yep. It was grant funded, but it was a really well funded position. And I got really lucky because it was only a 9-to-5 job. And that's as much as the grant would let me do, except for when we had concerts. Mm-hmm. So when I wasn't doing that, I didn't know what to do with myself. So I got another job working for a promoter, and that was just me reaching out, seeing if they needed help with anything. And so I would literally work 9-to-5 at the jazz venue and doing the nonprofit stuff. And then I would go by 5:30, be opening doors at a venue and doing all the concert settlements and ticketing for shows at 3 different clubs in Pittsburgh.
Very cool.
And then that ended up rolling into my next job. I ended up going to that full time.
The part time, the venue one.
Yeah.
Became a full time job.
And that's when I started doing more operational stuff, and I was doing all of their books and helping with insurance. So I guess I'm just a very detailed person, so I fall into the operational areas easily.
Just a timeline, how long did it take to go to full time with that job?
Like about a year and a half.
Gotcha.
So, and that was just because I think I got frustrated in jazz because it was very old school mindset. And when I got the job, they were really excited about, I mean, this kind of shows my age, but in 2009, like Twitter was still very new and blogging was still very new. And they really, when I got hired, wanted to embrace that. And so I was trying to set up a program so that we could incorporate those things, mm-hmm. but it ended up they were very hesitant and scared of it still. So I felt like it was time for me just to like get out into the music industry and collect a bunch of skills that hopefully later on down the road I could take back to the jazz community and apply it.
Sure. Okay, well, but there you are, successfully doing this operational stuff for several venues. How long does that go on for?
That was for, well, I did it part-time for like about 6 months and I did full-time for a year. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to have a neighbor who knew some random guy who moved into his old office. And he called me late at night. He said, there's this guy, he works in music. He has a label and he has a management company. You should meet him. And so I met him the next day and his office literally had one desk in it and that was it. And I didn't know any of his artists, and I didn't know anything really about him, but I really liked him, and I thought he had a really good vision, and so I decided that he needed help. He never hired anyone before. He didn't know what he needed, but he needed someone, and so I decided to take a job with him, and I liked the venue work, but I realized, like, it was a big fish in a small pond, and I wanted to do something at, like, a bigger level outside of just Pittsburgh, so I signed on with this record label management company, and it was a hip hop company. Mm-hmm. And we had an artist, Wiz Khalifa, who just dropped a single, Black and Yellow, that it was like Super Bowl time for Pittsburgh. So he got all this press. He got an album release that was doing really, really well. So within the first 6 months I was at the label, he went from being an independent artist struggling to being signed to Atlantic and just exploding. So at the same time, there was another artist from Pittsburgh who was 100% independent and kind of grew quickly because he was in the upstream of Wiz. So we had two artists and two people that we managed and were the label for. So it was a crazy cool experience. So I was able to do all the operations. I was doing all of their merch. I was doing all the photo shoots and video shoots. It was a really cool time. And the company grew to about 10 people, but the first year or two, it was just four of us. And we ended up getting our own tour bus and like riding around the country when the artists were on a summer tour. We had like two work live spaces. So we were constantly in New York and LA living together, working together, building this brand. And it was just a really fun time.
What was the name of that label, if you don't mind sharing?
It's called Rostrum Records.
Rostrum. Cool.
And now it's in LA. So I was the first employee that was asked to move to LA to open their LA office.
So you did move to LA then?
I did. And when I was in Pittsburgh, the second person that was hired was based in New York, and we had an office there, but I was the only one that lived in Pittsburgh. So I would travel a lot. Once I moved to LA, the Pittsburgh office pretty much shut down. So.
Gotcha. So what year are we talking when you go out to LA?
2013.
Gotcha. So what then? You're heading up the LA office?
Then the company was growing. We started signing more artists.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up actually keeping Wiz as a label client, but not as a management. And then Mac Miller, who was our independent artist that we managed and had on our label, ended up leaving to sign to major. And it was just like time for everyone, I think, to just grow up and fly the nest and change things up. So we signed some newer projects. I started managing two small indie bands and developing that. And it got to be, I just hit a ceiling there. And everything, I knew the company so well inside out. It started to grow where there were more processes and paperwork, and the building part of it that I loved was over. And then I just happened to get this idea for the computer bag, and it was something it was a scratch I had to itch, I guess.
Go on. I'm curious more about that. Talk about that whole thought process where you started thinking about computer bags.
Yeah, well, I think what happened was, when I started at the label in 2011,
mm-hmm.
Mac Miller went on his first tour, and he didn't have anything merch-wise, and I realized just from working the venues that a lot of artists on the road make a lot of money by selling t-shirts. So I suggested the first week that I worked there that we sell t-shirts on his MySpace page, and that quickly grew from selling maybe like 25 shirts a week, including what he's selling at shows, to maybe selling about 100 shirts a day. And in the first year, we did almost $750,000 worth
of
merch. And yeah, he was making a ton. It was insane. And the second year, he was making over $1 million. So because I was like, I love the merch process, and I had been in that with him, I started when he was selling hundreds of shirts a day, I was not only like making the content to like post it on his site and do the promotions, but I was also fulfilling all the orders, and I just kept growing with it. And then I found a company to pass it off to, and we passed it off to a major merch company and did licensing and retail deals. So I was there for all of it. And hip-hop artists, sometimes you're sourcing the most random things, like vaporizers or snapback hats. So I figured I could somehow source all these random items that they wanted and get hats made in China. If I wanted to make a prototype for a computer, I probably could, just by using my contacts and like the process of designing and sourcing that I'd seen in merch. And because I loved it, I was like, if I can make artist merch, I could probably make Sarah merch. And so that's kind of how I looked at it. And I started making prototypes in LA, in my second bedroom
like after work and on the weekends.
Gotcha.
So it seems kind of far-fetched, but I guess like the bones of it and the merchandise connect it. So.
And so what then?
That was kind of how that all cohesively worked together. So,
and how far along were you then when you moved to New York? And by the way, why did you move to New York, since it sounds like you were in L.A.?
So, well, L.A., we had a couple prototypes made, and we had finally gotten one into, like, being a good spot. L.A. didn't have the tools and the resources that we needed. A lot of the leather manufacturers had shut down in L.A. So we had a good prototype. And my business partner who I was working on, she actually was in Florida at the time, and I just went to visit her, and she found out she got relocated to New York, and New York just had more of the fundraising opportunities that we needed and better vendors to work with. Mm-hmm. So I just decided for us to be together and to have those resources, it was a good time to move to New York, with her, because she was on corporate housing, so it was a free place for both of us to stay where we could be together, and I could just focus on trying to figure out how to make this bag.
Understood. And
but I probably put in, when I think about it, I probably put over 1,000 hours worth of work while I had a job before I left. So
well, that's a real commitment.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid idea and vision before I took the leap of leaving.
Gotcha. And I think that takes us to present. As you said, you sold a whole ton of stuff, and you've been busting your tail ever since.
Exactly. Yep.
Cool. Well, all right then. Let's move on to the third part of the interview. So first question I have for you is, what, if any, is your current relation to music?
Well, my parents are both music teachers. So, like, when I go home, my dad's playing trumpet, like, 4 to 6 hours a day. And we're always talking about it. My boyfriend works at Spotify. So, he's at shows every night. And we are always listening and talking about music. So, music is still really, really a big part of my life. And it will always be, like, my first passion, I think, that I won't ever be able to get away from. I don't play my bass. I have my bass. Out of all things I did sell, I had 2 upright basses, and both of them, like, I refused to let go of. So I still have them with me.
Well, that is commitment to hang on to 2 upright basses.
Because it's a very aggressive instrument.
Yeah.
I know. But it's so big. After playing it for 12 years... It's like a whole, it's like an attack, like, I don't know, it's like selling a friend or like a person. It's just really tricky. There's more of a intimate relationship with it, I guess. So I kept them because they both have different sounds and personalities. So I have them, but I just don't use them mm-hmm. as much. And I don't know if it's because I don't have a desire to, or if I just like have locked that part of my life away. And if I open that can of worms, it would be either sad, or I just don't know if I can be a hobby musician and have fun with it. Like, I feel like if I'm in it, I'm all the way in it, and I need to practice my skills hours a day. Like, I don't know if I can casually play the bass. So I just don't. But I listen to music all the time. I still love it in my everyday life.
All right. Next question. It sounds, of course, like you were – perhaps living the dream of a music business graduate for a while there. But thinking about your current job, and as you say, you did not go to design school, but let's say relative to just getting some other generic bachelor's degree, is there anything you feel that your mm-hmm. Berklee education did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now?
I think Berklee was awesome because there were no boundaries and limits. Like, you would stay up 24/7 if you wanted to and make things and create things. And I think it's really, it was helpful because you know, Berkeley credits, each class can be like a half a credit or a whole credit. So you're taking a lot of different classes in a semester. Mm-hmm. I think some colleges it's like one class is 3 credits. You take 3 or 4 classes. At Berkeley, there'd be times I take like 6 or 7 classes a semester. So you're like split in 20 different directions. And I think as much as that's hard to multitask, like it's such an important skill to have for the real world. And I really learned how to focus on different areas at the same time. And I think my music business degree, when I took marketing classes, remember I had a semester where we built a business plan. And all of those things like were exercises for just being an entrepreneur and starting your own thing. So whether you're applying it to the music industry or your own company, there are all lessons and skills that are so important. I just feel like instead of being in a normal college where it was like Susie opens a candy store, it's just like Susie opens a music store. Like everything was so relatable and more fun because it was all around a passion that we had. So I learned basic business skills. I just learned them in a more intriguing way.
Gotcha. A great answer. So let's do the flip side of that, which is, again, Berkeley gives that 1 degree, a Bachelor of Music, and you went there knowing that. But is there anything where you look back in your education, you say, huh, it would have been really useful to know this thing, and Berkeley could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
I will say that I never was forced to write. I hate writing anyways. My grammar's awful. But I was never forced to write a paper. Even in, like, I think a advanced law class, I had to write a 10-page paper, and it was like we could pick our topic. And it was more about, like, expressing an idea than, like, grammatical errors. So I didn't – that's the only thing I didn't have that people coming out of school had was they knew, like, MLA formatting, and they had written all these long papers, which I'm glad I didn't have to, but I wish I would have had the structure and, like, a more formal writing critique, just so when I got into the business world, even though music industry for the most part is pretty laid back, it still was like a skill I didn't quite fully develop the way I should have. I didn't have like that structure.
I'm wondering if things have changed because at Berkeley these days students have to do 40 credits of liberal arts, and I think it was 30 in your time.
Yeah, but it might have been.
Also, like, all freshmen have to take a class called Writing and Communications. Does that ring a bell or no?
No, I never had to do that, but that is actually really good to hear because that's the only part where I ever felt like I was behind. And like I said, I hated writing papers, so I'm glad I didn't have to do it. But being a business major, mm-hmm. it was, like, one of those things I wish I was forced to really have to do. And then I think the only other hard part about Berkeley was that you were in this like musical utopia and then you got out of it and you went to like a musical job, but like not everyone played an instrument and not everyone had those experiences. So it was just kind of like life was a little bit disappointing because in school it was just so amazing. Like you had all these resources, like I could do music business during the day and then go record in a studio all night. So you could have, like, the best of everything.
But this sounds so, like one of those sometimes I work too hard questions on the interview. You're saying the problem with Berkeley was it was too good?
That's exactly what it was. And it was the coolest experience. And you really can't go back because all the friends, like, everything, you know, you can't freeze that moment in time and go back to it. You just have to evolve and, like, let it go. But
gotcha.
It was amazing. I think now they have a master's program. Before, I think that what didn't exist, or it was like just being talked about.
It's only a couple years old.
And that's, I think, do you have to go overseas to do it?
Oh, good question. So you're probably where they opened a campus in Valencia, I feel like about 5 years ago. And
yep.
The Valencia, right from the get-go, had master's programs. But I believe there was like this past September, Berkeley and Boston started up, I think, 2 master's programs. And I'm hesitant to say what they are because I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it might be like film scoring and performance, or so they're very specialized.
Ah, got it. Well, and I guess the only other thing I could say that I wish I would have known is I took really great like venue production classes, and a lot of people were pairing their major and they would double major. I wish I would have understood the value of pairing certain things together. Like, if you love live music and you like lighting and working in a venue, like, and you have the ability and skill to do MP&E, because that would be a good pairing. Because when I got out of school, a lot of people that were getting jobs were road managers who could also then run a board, because it was like two people in one. And I would have never thought the value of knowing sound and doing a business side, like being a tour manager. But then as I came out, I started realizing, like, these things were pairing up. But it was something I never thought about.
So you're saying that maybe if Berkeley had given some guidance as to what things would go well together.
Just some insight, yeah. And the one other thing, and this I promise will be the last one, is what I thought was funny. My last semester of Berkeley, I had a health class. And that's when they told me how bad the sound can be on your ears in a practice room. And they told us that, like, Northeastern made, like, student rate, what do you call it? Like, earplugs. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have known that. I wish they would have told that to us at, like, orientation.
Gotcha.
There were, like, resources like that that were at other schools. Yeah. And you're in 4 years of music playing in all these situations. And you need your ears for your career.
Yeah, right. As you say, here's what you should have done for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's like what you did for the past 4 years. You should have gone down the street to get these great earplugs. And now I have them, and it's been such a life changer. But now that I'm in my 30s, I see all these people who are losing their hearing. And it's really sad, because it's like when you have a career in music and you're A&Ring doing all these types of things, going to shows every night, you need to be able to hear to do your job.
That's a really excellent point. I will do my best to pass that on to somebody with the power to do something about that. So,
you just get all these orientation packets and, like, coupons to Voloco and all that stuff. And it's just, like, a flyer to go to Northeastern and get earplugs custom made for $100. Like, that is a deal. So, and it's just right there.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. So another question I have for you is, sounds like you're doing something you love and doing well with it, on a great path. And, you know, you took that leap to start your own company. Now, as you can imagine, not every Berkeley graduate has found that great path that you have. And some people perhaps even have an idea of something they could try to do as a company, but they haven't, you know, done it. What advice do you have for any of these folks? Or even perhaps people in their last year at Berkeley staring out into the big scary world?
What I think we have to do is, like, keep in mind that we're all really fortunate because we're passionate about music. So it's not like a job. It's a part of our life. It's in us. And I think as long as you focus on music and you remember that, and not to, like, lose that passion and drive. Okay, so when I moved to Pittsburgh, there was, you would not think of Pittsburgh being a music industry type of city. So I had to work extra hard to keep music in my life and find jobs. And whether it was interning or working for $50 a night at a show and, like, selling merch, just to stay in that group of people and network, it's like the opportunities will come. It's not easy. Sometimes you're in situations where it's tricky, but as long as you make sure that your focus is music every day and you're exercising that and you're talking to people who are in it, a job will come. And a situation will happen. And if it hasn't come yet, it's just because someone is still in a position that they need to leave so you can take it. Like, everything will line up.
Well, so, that's great for
You just can't say, well, this is like getting a little tricky. I'm just going to go be a mortgage broker and work 9 to 5. That takes your eye off.
And yet, you are not working in music. You are doing music.
I don't know. Did that help?
Well, it was great talk for people who are still doing the music thing. But I'm also wondering, because you're a successful, so far, entrepreneur. And do you have any tips for people considering that sort of path?
Leaving music and going to something different?
Yeah, specifically.
Everyone, this is the second time that I left music. When I played a lot in high school, I took a break. Mm-hmm. And I stopped playing for 2 whole years. And it actually was like a week before I went to college at a fashion school, I decided not to go and get back into music. So I think sometimes it is good to step away. And if you have an idea or you have the desire to do something, musicians are so good at teamwork, at practicing alone, at improvising, at listening and responding. All those skills are amazing to apply to other industries, and a lot of people don't have those skills and they haven't practiced them. So if they want to go to a different industry, they're already probably ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. So I think exploring that is a very positive thing to do, and it can be really refreshing.
Gotcha.
Sometimes you get burnt out, because the one hard thing about music is you're always practicing. You could play one note for an hour trying to make it the best sounding note. And you're constantly looking at yourself trying to be this perfect sound and musician. Sometimes you just need a break, like to mentally get away from it. Cause it's an emotional thing. It's a mental thing. It's a physical thing. So exploring is good, and music will always be there. Even when I work today, I watch TV. I never listen to music when I work. I can't do it. I get too distracted and I want to like DJ. So I listen to music differently now, but that doesn't mean in a year or two, I might not go back or find a different way to utilize music in my life.
Okay. Sorry, just to, do you have any other advice for people thinking about starting a business?
For starting a business. You have to be willing to give up everything to make it work. Because there are days where it's very, very hard, where you don't know what you're going to do next or how you're going to survive another month. And the idea that is going to succeed is the one that you're willing to like sell the extra thing for, to go above and beyond for, to be uncomfortable for, to sacrifice for. Because it's constantly just pushing through a lot of hard times. And even as you grow, having worked at basically only startups, mm-hmm. there never really is an easy time. There's challenges every day. And there's good quarters and bad quarters. So you have to really love something, because it's a sacrifice, and it's a weight on you personally, and it's a weight on your family and your friends. So you have to really love the idea. But if you love the idea, then you will be fine.
Cool. All right, so the very last thing is just, you have the mic, so to speak. Is there anything you feel we missed here? Anything else you'd like to say?
Huh. I think whatever you put your mind to, you can accomplish. So they always say, like, two things. Like, if you can sing it, you can play it, and listen, imitate, and create. So I think both things, it's like if you can like envision it or dream it, you'll be able to do it. And if you watch others who've done it before you and try and learn from their mistakes and imitate it and then make it your own in some way, you'll be fine. So.
All right. Well, that's a great thing to end on. My wife and I will be taking a look at your website in the near future. Those sound very useful and cool.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Also look for a message from me on LinkedIn in the very near future. And
wonderful.
I really enjoyed hearing all about what you've been up to.
Well, hopefully this is helpful for
a good group of people.
I sure hope so. So,
if there's anything else I can do for, you know, this project or the school, just let me know. I'm always willing to help out.
Thank you very much. I certainly, when the interview gets published, which will probably be in a month or two, I have a few in the can, that I will certainly be passing it on to Don Gorder, the music business chair, because they always love to hear about successful music business grads.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and have a great rest of the day. Thank you for reaching out to me.
Good luck with everything.
Thanks. Bye.